welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as always, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
I wish I could say I was doing better, Scott, but I'm a little queasy about this team. They come off a close win against UConn on Sunday, 64-60, in which they damn near blow a double-digit lead, and then they get a close win against SMU yesterday night, 52-49, a game in which they were trailing at halftime and needed to really buckle down at the very end to really secure the win. I don't know what to make of this team. I don't know. I don't know what to expect of them night in, night out, especially on the road. What are your thoughts about the last couple of weeks?
It's been an interesting road trip, to say the least. We kind of thought, like, going into the weekend after the UCF game, like, oh, UConn hadn't really been playing well. Like, they just gotten stomped on the road by SMU, of all teams. But then, like, they play Cincinnati really tough after Cincinnati has a 15-point lead, and you give up a 16-0 run to UConn. Nearly coughed the game away at the end, before Kane Broome is, like, the only player on the team who had, like, any offensive awareness and, like, drills a gigantic three to ice the game. But, like, we can go pros-cons real quick. Pro, you win two games on the road. Cons, like, you play two teams that are 500 overall and near the bottom of the league standings, and you nearly, like, gag both games away. Because SMU has a shot to take the lead late, but for some reason, like, McMurray decides to, like, shoot a three instead of going to the basket. Was kind of beneficial to the Bearcats. Like you play a team without, like, their best player in UConn, and you play a team that just lost by 40 points and is probably going to fire their coach at the end of the year. Like, I don't know. Like, being 24-4 is, like, awesome, but at the same time, as, like, this team just playing on such, like, a thin razor's edge that you can see positive and negative, like, out of every single game. It's kind of really been a bizarre season that way.
Yeah, it's, I mean, when you look at the makeup of both of these teams, they appear to be, personnel-wise, set up where it plays in Cincinnati's favor. Like you mentioned, I mean, Jalen Adams is out. He didn't play against Cincinnati. Hurley's doing some nice things with that program, but, I mean, they were without their best player. And then SMU, still reeling from the Larry Brown sanctions, is only able to field a team of about seven. Like, their starters played over 31 minutes. The only backup who got significant minutes was Nat Dixon, who had 25. I mean, basically, he has a six-man rotation, and that's his entire roster. Both of those teams are ones where you think UC basically should just wear them down in the second half, no matter how close the first half is. I mean, they were up against three against UConn. They were down six to SMU. The big difference there is that against UConn, they started to exert their dominance in that game. You mentioned they were up 15. And then, you know, I don't know what happened. They just, like, took the foot off the pedal. They started to walk the ball up the floor instead of pushing the pace after grabbing a rebound. They just got all out of sorts starting after that, like, 12-minute mark. Allowed UConn to get back in that game. UConn was up by one I think, like, the last media timeout. And then you jump ahead to last night's game. They just looked all out of sorts after pretty much halfway through that first half and just had to buckle down and grind out a three-point win against a team where they should be gassed against this UC team by the second half. UC didn't play a good game defensively. I think they held SMU to 49 points. Great. But I think they could have really clamped down and turned a lot of those defensive possessions into offensive points, but they didn't really do. They only forced nine turnovers, which is a little low for them defensively. And I mean, they won the rebounding battle great, but they just did not shoot that well last night. 19% from three. Their offensive efficiency was the second worst of the season, only behind the Ohio State game at the beginning of the year. It's just really lackluster performance on the road, both games.
Yeah, and really, in both senses, kind of bailed out by how poorly the other team shot.
Yes,
like that's UConn, it. UConn only 3 of 17 from 3, 1 of 8 the second half. Like, UConn missed a lot of free throws. Like, that's a game where, like, UC, like, should just be happy to survive that one and move on and hopefully not play UConn again. Because, like, UConn came back big on them twice. And, like, that was just a game where it seemed like UConn had a ton of chances to win and they couldn't hit a shot. Like, I guess you could say the same thing for SMU. But they shot 17 of 64 overall. Like, 14 of, or 4 of 21 from 3. Or, no, that was UC. My bad.
Yes, no, it's that bad, Scott. It is that bad.
SMU was 20 of 57, 7 of 24 from 3, and only attempted 3 free throws, one of which came, like, the closing minute when Jennifer fouls a guy who hit a 3-pointer. Like, just the, I don't know. It's just really frustrating. And, like, the SMU game especially was an awful game to watch. Like, just completely terrible. Like, you see, it seemed like they got, like, almost all their misses, and then nobody could score.
Yeah. Yeah, and go ahead.
Which, like, kind of, like, brings us to, like, the big question is, both of these teams played Cincinnati before, and then, like, they played them the second time, and, like, both times, Jerron Cumberland, like, gets the handcuffs put on them. Like, and now you play Central Florida again, and you play Houston again. Like, and you play Memphis again, like a team that nearly beat them, and two teams that nearly beat them, and the team that did beat them. So it really, really, like, just going to make these last three games really huge, especially since Memphis is playing well, and this is, like, their last big chance for a win if they want to have any type of, like, at-large consideration.
Yeah, I mean, the home and road splits about this team are just remarkably different. They're averaging 77 points at home, 65 on the road. They're shooting 46% from the field at home, 40% on the road, 38% from three at home, 30% on the road. It's just not a good road team. And, you know, it's one thing to get some of your lumps on the road throughout the season. You know, just to kind of build up that experience to have to grind out a win in an unfamiliar environment, potentially again in a hostile environment as well with the crowd screaming at you. But it's like it's been like that like every game, especially in conference play. Like East Carolina, they lost. Tulsa, they had to take to overtime to win. Wichita State was tight until Greg Marshall got teed up. Temple was tied. That's a 4-point win. Memphis was a 5-point win. You mentioned it earlier. They played UC really close last time, and they're just only getting better as the season goes on. Houston was a loss. UConn was a 4-point win. SMU, they only scored 52 points. Like, it's unfortunately, you know, the makeup of this team is that they just don't play well on the road. And if you're looking ahead to, like, AAC tournament play and NCAA tournament play, it doesn't bode well for this team's ability to move forward.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Like, we don't, like want to lean really negative, but, like, it's just been every single, like, almost every single game this year, outside of the road trip to Florida where, like, they, like, handle George Mason and Ole Miss. That seems more like the outlier, because you can't even go back further in, like, that UNLV game. Where, like, UNLV hasn't been anything good, and UC needed, like, to hold on to win that game, but another 4-point game. There's been, like, a really, like, challenging road slate for them. Like, not really because, like, their opponents, just because, like, for some reason, like, this team just doesn't have any other players, it seems, that, like, rise to the occasion. Like, you get, like, Cam Broome has really bailed him out twice. Like, at the game against Tulsa, like, won them that game. And then the game against UConn, like, really bailed them out at the end. Like, and last night, it was just Cumberland at the end just getting to the free throw line when SMU just couldn't stop them at all. So, like, I don't know. They just really need somebody to, like, be consistent. And, like, it's been a real struggle for a lot of guys lately.
Yeah, I mean, the book's been written on this team how to stop them offensively, and it's get in Jerron Cumberland's face and make sure he's bumped outside the three-point line and doubled everywhere else. And the last three games, he's totaled 11 points, 8, and 12. UC, who averages almost 73 points per game, has scored 60, 64, and 52 in those games. Cumberland's shooting 29% from the field, which is just terrible. Like, that is absolutely not Cumberland. The other side of the coin is, and you kind of alluded to it earlier, other guys are stepping up. Kane Broom has had some of his best games the last 2 weeks, being a second weapon offensively. Keith Williams continues to perform really well. Justin Jennifer has dropped off a little bit, but he's still able to pick it up a little, pick up some of the slack. So I ask you this, Scott, is that an encouraging kind of other side of the coin there? With even though Cumberland has seen his offense drop off in the last three games, and therefore UC's scoring has dropped off mightily, is it encouraging that UC's able to pull out three wins and see other guys contribute? If we're talking about how far this team can advance in the AAC tourney and the NCAA tourney.
Of course, you'd have to say it was encouraging. Like, Nicir Brooks has been playing pretty well lately, too. Like, he had a really rough shooting night against SMU. Like, he couldn't finish anything off his rebounds. But, yeah, I think it's mostly encouraging because, like, you could be losing all these games, and winning is a lot better. Because, like, right now, like, they're still, like, on the good old bracket matrix. They're scheduled, like, they're slated as a 7 seed. So, like, if you, like, lost almost any of these games, especially over the weekends, like, you end up in the danger territory where, like, you're an 8-9 seed, maybe even 8-9-10 seed, like, where you're definitely playing somebody decent in the first or second round. Like, and they keep winning and move up. Because it's really, it says a lot about the coaching staff, like, and what they've done this year. So you can, like, just go back through a lot of these games. And outside of, like, Mississippi State and, I guess, even East Carolina and, like, Houston, like, those three games, like, have been really the only ones where UC's, like, lost, like, their edge down the end. Like, the rest of the games, like, it's been the other team that's faltered and UC stepped up and made big plays. The first game against UConn doesn't even get a shot in regulation to win. And the Bearcats are able to finish them out in overtime. Same against Tulsa. And, like, so on through the season. So, like, in that sense, it's been, like, really encouraging. In the other sense, it's like you can't just skate through, like, a pretty, like, average schedule, like, on the league that's down. Mm-hmm. And really feel confident about your chances going on the road in conference tournament play and to NCAA tournament play.
Yeah, and that's kind of my concern, too, is because they have to go, like, if UC has any hope of taking home a regular season title, they have to win out. Houston is playing too damn well to lose any of their games coming up. I mean, clear favorite in every single game they have. They're going to be favored at Cincinnati, probably by at least 5 or 6 points. It's one of the situations where UC is looking ahead to Houston at the end of the schedule, but they've got a Central Florida game the Thursday before at like 7 o'clock, and we talked about this last week. Like, Central Florida needs a marquee win to hang on their wall to even get into the NCAA tournament. They're still sitting sort of on the bubble at like an 11 or 12, where rack up a few losses, and the selection committee is not going to favor them. So they need that Cincinnati win. UC's already been in a situation where they played a close game against Central Florida at home, nonetheless. And who knows what that game on the road is going to look like? And then you talk about going to Memphis. I mean, Memphis fans are probably going to show up to that, to any game that Memphis is in. If UC happens to get paired with Memphis and perform as poorly as they do on the road, they really did in that Memphis game a couple of weeks ago, you know, who knows how early they could get bounced out of the tournament. And then you look ahead to the NCAA tournament. We talked about this a little before. If you climb up into that 5-6 seed spot, and get maybe a 12 or 13 mid-major that is full of a bunch of guards that can shoot threes, they could get bounced early like they did against Harvard a few years ago. You just never know. There's too much inconsistency with this team outside of fifth third to really rely on them to win any given game.
Yeah, like that's definitely a fair point. It's like you could almost say like some of the home games, they haven't really been... Like, they've won. Like, the impressive factor hasn't really been there either. Which, like, I think makes these next couple of games really huge. Because, like, you mentioned Memphis. Like, they just got a big win over Temple. Like, they still don't have a quadrant one win. And, like, so they need this one really desperately. They only have two games left in their season. They could even finish as a top four seed in the conference. Like, I don't know if they have the tiebreaker over Temple or not. But... like they're just one game behind them. Like UCF like demolished SMU and then rolled up South Florida the other day. So then that was their first quadrant one win. And they play Houston this weekend before playing Cincinnati. So it's like they like two games for them. Like they absolutely need to win, you would think. Like they can't really afford to drop both of them. Even like they still have an outside chance at probably not of the conference title because Houston only has one loss. But they could end up getting that number two seed in the conference tournament, which you think would be very important to them. So like these games are against like hungry teams, and you hope the Bearcats are like ready to rise up and meet the occasion, which like they have pretty much all year. It's just they haven't done it in the way that calms our anxiety at all.
Yeah, maybe we're spoiled by last season where they were winning every single game by, like, double digits, you know, especially at home, I mean, quote, home, when they're playing down in Northern Kentucky, but, like, the home games against good opponents, they were winning fairly handily. I mean, they lost to Wichita State at home, but, like, for the most part, like, the AAC opponents had no shot as soon as they stepped onto the floor against UC down in Northern Kentucky. But at the same time, That middle class that we've been talking about all season has been a lot better this year. They're a lot more challenging. Memphis is a lot better. Temple, UConn, UCF, all of them are a lot better this year. And, yeah, like, to your point, they are winning these games. Like, they are, what you mentioned, they're 24-4 or something on the season. And they've only lost two conference games, even that fluke against East Carolina. And then, you know, that tough loss against the potential conference champion Houston, you know, they're finding ways to grind out those games, and they haven't been sexy. They've been more of like the 2012 Bearcats more than the 2017-18 Bearcats, which I guess it's okay. Like, until the formula doesn't work, I'm okay with them winning these games, but, like, I feel like we've got some kind of disappointment on the horizon, like, you know, them getting bounced in day one or day two of the AAC tournament, or being completely like outmatched and outscored in their first NCAA tournament game or something like that. Which, going back to the first part of this, going back to, you know, this past offseason, I don't know if I wouldn't have taken that, because I wasn't even sure if they were going to make the NCAA tournament at all this year.
Yeah, that's kind of a fair point, like, in the overall sense. Like, if you said, like, this team was going to comfortably make the tournament and, like, have a really sterling record and, like, be, what, second place in the league, like, you'd probably take that easily, like, going into the season. But, like, if you, like, the thing that really you can't do is, like, take away the end of last season. Like, that's going to stick with, like, a Mick Cronin team until they prove otherwise. Like, unfortunately, that's just how it works with our memories and everything. Like, you can't just blow that game against Nevada like they did last season. and then like expect everybody just to be like, oh, okay, you're just going to go out and like kick ass again. Because like I think Virginia almost has the same type of stigma against them.
They do, yeah. They're going to have, yeah, you mean losing to, being the only one seed to lose to a 16?
Yeah, because like really like, and like Tony Bennett not making the Final Four and like all the various ways that they've like kind of gagged it with like some of their best teams ever. It's like been almost like a weird parallel to Cincinnati with how they've made the Sweet 16 once and like haven't really broken through since then with some of their better teams ever, especially last year. Like this has been like a pretty solid follow-up season. Like, cause like you mentioned the league is getting better, but like some of these teams just aren't really good. So like me, like skating by like Tulsa and SMU and UConn and Wichita State and even South Florida, who is like under 500 in league play again, like doesn't really inspire a lot, but it's better than losing, which I think is just the really overall important sentiment. It's like you'd rather be 24-4 than like 20-8.
Yeah, and like you can almost draw some parallels to, I guess you could a little bit. Their 2011-2012 season where they went to the Sweet 16. That was a season where they lost to Presbyterian at home. I could be wrong. I don't know if the ECU loss trumped it, but I think it's either one or two is like the worst loss in the Mick Cronin era. They got drubbed by Xavier. They played a really soft non-conference schedule and won most of those games. They did fine in Big East play, but they lost to South Florida on the road. They lost to Rutgers on the road. They lost to West Virginia on the road. But then the Big East tournament came, and they went to the title game against Louisville. And then they went to the NCAA tournament game, or NCAA tournament, and they got to the Sweet 16. Like, Mick's only Sweet 16 appearance was that year. And granted, that team was full of seniors, and you know, they played a certain style of play that is vastly different than it is now. But I mean, they played a lot of really tight games in that year. I mean, they went to double overtime against Georgetown to advance in the Big East tournament, and then they beat the number two ranked Syracuse 71-68. And you know, maybe that's what's in the future for these guys. You know, maybe they'll just figure out a way to turn it on in AAC play and ride it right into the NCAA tournament. You just never know. Like, we look at like last year and how much they were just curb stomping teams in the regular season, and then they gave up a 22-point lead to Nevada with 12 minutes to go. You just never know, I guess.
I think like you were right with the parallels to the Sean Kilpatrick team that in 2014. It's like you just like go through and like look at their schedule. Like they have a close game against Pittsburgh, and like then like in league play, like a close game against SMU, who's like obviously better than. And like I think that was the year they got snubbed from the tournament. Like a close win over Houston. Like a South Florida played them really close twice. Like, and then like you get to the end of the season, like a close loss against Louisville. A close loss at UConn, a conference tournament. They play a couple of tight games. They play a tight game at Rutgers to end the regular season. And like then they end up getting like bounced in the first round in a close game. It's like that. We've talked about it a lot, like the parallels between that team and this team. It's because like you have one guy who's
right,
like your star, and like a lot of like solid role players and guys who step up around them. Like, obviously, that team had, like, more, like, star names. Like, Justin Jackson was, like, a big fan favorite and a senior.
Yeah.
And, like, Titus Rubles was, like, a pretty key rotation piece. Like, this team has a couple of nice guys. Like, your guards, are pretty solid. And, like, your big men contribute enough. It's just, like, their bench really has, like, nothing on it. And, like, there's one point I want to make up with the bench. I'll, like, circle back to it in a minute. But, like, if, like, that team ends up, like, the team from 2014, like, I guess it would be a good season, but I don't know. That's, like, outside of, like, Sean Kilpatrick being an All-American, like, I don't really, like, there's, like, really no lasting memories of that season just because of how, like, bad it ended, like, how they could have, like, won the conference outright, and they lost that really big game to Louisville. And then, like, UConn won the national title anyway, and Sean Kilpatrick didn't, like, win any individual awards. So, yeah.
Wait, didn't he win, like, the sportsmanship award?
Everybody knows that didn't count.
Is that a real award? Are you serious? I was told it was real.
It was quote-unquote real.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, you look at the, I mean, you're right, like, the makeup of that team is, you know, they had a few seniors and stuff like that, but, you know, probably didn't meet expectations, and they had to grind out a few games near the end. They looked bad near the end of the year. They did not look good at all near the end of the year. You just never know what these teams are going to do going forward. You know, you kind of alluded to UConn. I mean, no one really expected UConn to win the title, and they came out as, what, like an 11 seed that, like, just rode, was it Kemba Walker, to a national title game? You just never know what teams are going to do in tournament play. And that is one thing. Like, if you're talking about the bracket as a whole, the bottom part of the bracket is very soft. So, you know, we talked about, you know, a mid-major coming out and facing UC as, like, a 12 or 13 seed. But what if, like, Indiana slipped in, or I don't know, not Indiana. Who am I talking about? I can't remember. Some terrible Big Ten team that was on the bubble that everyone was like, what the hell are you talking about? What if, like, I mean, one of those, like, mid-tier Big Ten teams that just has, like, a good RPI, like, slips into, like, a 12 or 13 seed? Like, I would take UC in that game just because of their ability to win, you know, a lot of games, and their experience in the NCAA tournament. Like, any of those, like Winthrop or something would scare the hell out of me. But, like, if you had, like, a random, like, eighth best team in the Big Ten, like, come out and, like, be a 12 seed or something, I would take that any day of the week.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Like, let's just, like, look at the matchups real quick. Like, if, like, the hypothetical 7 seeds, Cincinnati is one, the 10 seeds, like TCU, like you would, I would take my chances against TCU. Like Ohio State, they probably won't play again. Like VCU, I wouldn't really want to play. And then NC State, which, who knows about NC State? Like that would be one I would feel like less confident in. But I would take two of those, like, four teams, definitely. Like the 11 seeds, Florida, like, who knows? Playing them would be fine. Like, Arizona State is, like, not really good. And then the two AAC teams are 11 seeds, so UC definitely won't play them in the first round. It's like, if that's, like, any of your competition, like you just kind of hope you end up with a, like you said, the high conference team that's really wild up and down. And I would prefer one, like, that's less talented and, like, more shaky, like a Florida, or yes, like a TCU, yeah. Or even like an Ohio State. I wouldn't mind playing them again. Like, some, yeah, the ones a ton of talent, like NC State, even though, like, NC State's been really good and really bad. I don't know, that team would scare me.
Well, yeah, because they're almost like UC. They're all over the board in terms of their performance. But, like, a team like Ohio State, that's completely, like Ohio State or Villanova, if, like, both of those teams continue to slide into UC's corner of the bracket, I would take them any day of the week. But, yeah, it's like the mid-major, like, the strong mid-major teams, like a Hofstra or something, or, like, oh, Loyola Chicago is in the tournament again, apparently. Furman, something like that. Like, Wofford. Like, any of those teams, like, would scare the hell out of me. But if they got, like, Utah State or Alabama, or you mentioned Arizona State out of a very weak Pac-12, like, I would take any of those teams. It's just, you kind of mentioned it on the call earlier. Like, what if UC gets, like, like, I don't know, Wofford out west somewhere on, like, a Friday at noon, you know, something weird, some weird game like that. That would just scare the hell out of me.
We've seen enough of UC going out west and playing some of these weird games where, like, West Coast, like, games just seem like they start at weird times, and, like, nobody's ever at those games. Especially like when it was like you seeing St. Joe's out in like what it was like Spokane. Like all the
Oregon no, fans no, weren't no, there. Don't talk about that game. Don't talk about the Octavius Ellis non layup. Oh my god. Bad memories.
Even like the Harvard game, I don't remember where that was, but it was. I don't think that was out west, was it? It couldn't have been because Michigan State was in that bracket.
I think it. I want to say it was. I feel like didn't they play like two or three games? Like it was like 2 out of 3 years they played in Spokane.
Hey, maybe it was.
Let's see. Cincinnati, Harvard. Let's see. 2014, it was somewhere. This is great radio. It was Spokane! Ha-ha! There's an example.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was out west. They were in the East Regional, but played out west. Yeah, so you were right. You win that round, Chris.
Yeah, but you did call it. I mean, every game they play out west is just terrible. Terrible. I mean, you just saw like last year. I mean, they handled Georgia State, and they should have won Nevada, and that game was in Nashville. Like, do you have anything else to say about like the UC, or do you want to move on to other topics?
Oh yeah, I'll circle back to my rotation point.
Okay,
I know we talked about in the last Buzz podcast how Mika wouldn't change anything, and. Like that's very, very evident by the fact that like Mamadou Diarra like got like heavy run the last two games. Like not really against SMU, but he played in the second half of that game, which just seemed weird. One of the weirdest lineups of the season with like Diarra, like Fredericks, I think it was like Broom and like Logan Johnson. Like I don't know, it was like a really, really weird team that scored like 4 points. But, like, he played, like, a ton against UConn, and, like, it was okay. Like, he actually looks like he can play basketball now. And, like, he looks like he's, like, knows what's going on. Unlike last year, where, like, it seemed like he was, like, really, like, floating through a lot of the time. It's because, like, Nysier Brooks just, like, didn't play against UConn for whatever defensive reasons. But yeah, like, I feel like if there was any hope of them ever doing anything interesting with their lineups, it's gone. It's like, you're right. Like, this is just how Mick Cronin coaches, and he's going to keep doing the same, like, two big lineup no matter what.
Yeah, and like, in that game, Diarra probably only played because Brooks got into foul trouble so early. I can't remember, but I thought Brooks picked up his, like, second foul, like, foul. It was, like, halfway through the first.
He fouled out. Yeah, he fouled out.
Yeah.
In minutes. He kind of looked like the wrong set in the box score.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. But, I mean, you're right, though. I mean, Diarra played pretty damn well in that game. He was definitely a contributor to the win rather than, you know, UC winning in spite of him. Like, he was solid off the bench. I mean, you don't know how much run he's going to get next year with Scott and Brooks coming back, but, I mean, there's definitely a few bright spots that he's shown in that game.
I think that's going to be one of the interesting things, like what they do with their front court rotation next year. Like, he's just gotten his minutes at the expense of Sosume. It's like you have like two kind of raw big guys behind your two starters. Like, so, like, whoever comes out of like that as the third big will be like an interesting competition for the summer.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure if unless Diarra makes massive leaps in the offseason, like Keith Williams did this past year, if he's going to really supplant Scott or Brooks. Probably Brooks, maybe. I'm not sure, but you just never know. I mean, Diarra, he came here with pretty good accolades, at least offensively. He just was a little slow on the defensive end, which that's borne out over the course of the season. But you just never know what kind of leaps they're going to make in the offseason.
Yeah, it's definitely true. And, like, we know number one thing, like, is defense and how these bigs play defense. Except in the case of DeBerry, where like, he was their only scoring big man that one year.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you have anything else to talk about with the team specifically, or do you want to go on to other topics?
We can move on to other topics. So I think like the big summary really is, what is this team away from home, and are they going to do, how are they going to handle these last three games, like when your next two opponents really like are circling for big wins?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, this could be a team that, you know, completely flames out in the AAC tournament, the NCAA tournament. Or this could be a team that, you know, digs down deep and just wins close game after close game. There's a lot. It's almost kind of exciting, right? Because I feel like last season, a lot of us, but some of us might have been getting bored by the fact they were just blowing teams out, and we were just basically sitting around, tapping our feet, waiting for tournament play. Now they have to basically fight until the very last game of the season to win the conference tournament, and, you know, potentially get a good seed in both the AAC and NCAA tournament. It's sort of exciting. I've almost forgotten what that's like.
that's a really interesting point. Because like last season, they had started like conference play with like that Evans game winner against Temple, and then like they just like almost blew every single team out until they got to like the Houston Wichita State games, which were like around this time last year. So. Yeah, like this is like a ton better, I think. So at least it's interesting. And
yeah, I mean, talk to me again if they lose their first AAC and NCAA tournament game. So we'll probably have a different opinion then.
Or even like they lose out somehow, or like go 1-2 the rest of the way, and then lose early in Memphis, and then have some like weird seed in the tournament. Yeah, then I guess we'll see how happy we are then. I just really hope that they end up with like the sixth seed, because I'd rather not have to play any of the top two seeds in the NCAA tournament.
Well, the problem, Scott, is that like that is a scenario that's out there. They could very well lose out. Like UCF is going to be a tough game. They've already lost to Houston, and you know they get Houston at home, but. Houston's been curb stomping teams, and then like we mentioned, Memphis has been playing better and better and better the last couple of weeks. This team could very well lose out. Like that is not a scenario that's completely unrealistic. Even 1-2 is something that I could see happening. At the same time, I could see 3-0. So who knows? That's what makes it exciting, right?
Yeah, and just to quickly finish up that point. Current three seeds, just on bracket matrix, Houston, Purdue, Marquette, LSU. Like, you take any of those teams over Michigan State, North Carolina, Tennessee, Michigan. Like, you take any of those teams, like, 100 times out of 100 over, like, North Carolina or Michigan State. Like, if UC is playing Michigan State tentatively in the second round, they aren't going to make it out of the first weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Any of those teams like that you mentioned that has been playing, you know, even if they're playing like inconsistent and maybe picked up a couple of bad losses, like Auburn, like they're 18-9, but that is a team that could very well only have like a handful of losses. Very talented team. And what is Auburn projected to be, Scott?
An 8 seed.
Yeah, so if you wind up as an 8-9 seed or something like that, or like, you know, facing an 8 seed, you never know like what's going to happen in the tournament, but like you're right, like you don't want to face those teams that are either underperforming or playing inconsistently or are just a mid-major that can underseeded.
There's even some parallels to the 2017 team that went 30-6, 16-2 in conference play, finished second, ended up with the sixth seed, got kicked out west again, like destroyed Kansas State, and then played UCLA and just got like walloped by that team in the second round.
Right.
So, like that was another team with a gaudy record, but that team did took care of like a lot of business. that like this team hasn't really done. So I don't know. I don't know. You can see like just the record wise, like the similarities, because that team only had four losses in the regular season before like they lost the conference title game to SMU and then the NCAA tournament game, which could happen to this team too, but hopefully it will be different. Because nobody wants them to lose.
I know. I mean, and like we talked about this earlier, it's, you know, I'm happy that they're making the tournament. I'm happy that they're, you know, they're fairly comfortably in. Like, there's probably going to be, like, a meteoric scenario that actually gets them kicked out of the tournament. But at the same time, like, over the course of a season, expectations change, you know. They're ranked right now. They're comfortably in. Now I kind of wanted to see how far they go. And it will be disappointing if they get knocked out in the first round of either tournament. Then we're going to all of a sudden start talking about is Jaron Cumberland coming back next year? Is he going to play again next to Samari Curtis, or is Samari Curtis going to step in there? Like, what's the team going to look like? Go ahead.
I think they could lose. They could just lose their next four games, and I think they would make it easily. So, like, I'm not really worried about, like, them missing the tournament, like, any scenario.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I meant, like, you know, basically when I say meteoric scenario, I mean, like, a meteor needs to come out of the sky and destroy this entire program and university for it to happen.
Or, like, a meteor, like, lands on the team, like, you have to play walk-ons or something to end the season.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Let's switch gears a little bit. What did you want to talk about, Chris?
Well, I think we kind of talked about it a little bit before the show. UCLA rumors, right? Mix involved there, Scott?
I guess, like, this one's not really, like, any type of breaking news. But, like, the LA Times, like, threw out an article the other day. But, like, once again, like, linked Mick Cronin to that job. Like, obviously, he's, like, a candidate. And, like, he should be with, like, how much they've won. It's going to be interesting to see just where that job search goes. It's got to think Tony Bennett's going to be, like, one of the biggest names on the list. Like, he hasn't publicly turned down that job yet. Like, where Mick Cronin ranked, and, like, if he would want to go out west, it's going to be a pretty big story. Because, like, UCLA is UCLA. Like, whatever they do for their next coach is going to be, like, pretty big news. Like, I know Cincinnati's, like, a historic program, but, like, they really don't get any bigger than UCLA. Especially on the West Coast, because if, like, you can turn them around. Like, obviously, we just saw, like, the last, like, decade when, like, Ben Howland did it. Like, that's a place where you can win and win really huge and get great players. And, like, if Mick chose to go out West, he would have, like, a weird legacy at Cincinnati in some senses. Like, his overall, like, legacy would be, like, pretty great, like, with the whole turnaround and, like, 22 wins in 8 straight years.
Yeah, there's an article that came out a few months ago. I don't remember if it was before or after Alford got officially fired, but basically scathing reviews of the UCLA program. Like, I don't know if you read it or not, Scott, but it basically, summing it all up, UCLA does not support their program like you think they would. Like, you think a UCLA program that, you know, won multiple national titles, they've got name recognition all over the country, some parts of the world, they've had Hall of Fame coaches and players come through there. They don't even take charter jets to away games. Like, their team sits in airports waiting for flights, like Joe Schmoes, like you and me. They don't have separate dorms for athletes. They, you know, they have a ton of money. They just don't spend it on the basketball program. You know, you contrast that to what Mick has built here. He has a brand new arena, a brand new locker rooms. He does have charter jets. His athletes have their own dorms. He has a nutrition program. They're set aside from other student athletes where they can focus on everything they need to do with the program. It's like Bass Ackwards in UCLA. Like, there's underlying issues with that program that, you know, I don't know if it would attract Mick there, unless he could call for some kind of, you know, massive change to the athletic department that apparently, like, Steve Alford wasn't able to do. I mean, this is all kind of like, you know, way putting the cart before the horse, because I don't think he takes that job anyway. But lots of issues with that program that you know, a new coach would have to think about really hard before accepting.
Like, it's pretty clear, like, they need a gigantic turn of culture there. Just, like, from where they are now, like, where they have been the last couple of years. Like, Steve Alford was, like, a questionable hire when they made it. And, like, it really has turned out pretty poorly for them. And, like, almost every sense, besides the, like, 1 year with Lonzo where they were really great.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't stop him from landing 4- and 5-star recruits, but, you know, his coaching definitely was subpar, but it just seems like he was basically working against a lot of factors around him that you wouldn't think a coach at UCLA would have to work against. But it's a moot point. I don't, you know, Mick's not going anywhere. He's got custody things to deal with his daughter. I think really the only school that could potentially come open would be like Louisville down the road. But I mean, unless Chris Mack completely tanks there, which doesn't sound like he's going to do, that's not going to come open for a really long time. It's Mick here to stay until he doesn't want to, pretty much.
Yeah, I mostly agree, but like the one thing that like does like give me pause is that, I don't know, like maybe I just see UCLA as like a better job than it is. Like it, because that just seems like a, like if you could plug in, like that's such a easy place to win.
Oh yeah,
and win big, like with all the despite some of the other things, you would think that they would start pumping money back into their basketball. Like that'd be a requirement if they go out and get like Tony Bennett or like Jamie Dixon or somebody like that. So yeah, it'd be like really interesting to see. We saw like Mick like flirt around with UNLV a lot a couple years ago. Like it seemed like ultimately that was just like more to like get a better contract from UC and whatever happened with Adidas. But like, who knows? Well, I guess we'll have to go through that cycle again if like he's one of the names that pops up when UC season is over, hopefully in April.
Yeah, hopefully in April. Yeah, and that honestly, like when you see coaches flirting with other programs, I mean, that's great for the program. I mean, find similarities there with Luke Fickell negotiating with West Virginia, at least inquiring about the role. Like, that's great. Like, that's awesome. That's what you want to see. You, like, if you are a manager at a company, you want to see your top performers get interest from outside of your company. It shows that you've hired and grown valuable candidates that bring a lot to the world, to the business world. The same thing at UC. You know, we could be going through years of like Tommy Tuberville where no one was calling for him to get a job elsewhere. Or you can go through times like Mick Cronin and Luke Fickell who are always going to be in that where's he going to go next season or where's he going to be coaching at next season kind of conversation as soon as the season is over. You know, I would take that any day of the week. And especially like you mentioned it earlier, flirting with UNLV probably helped push some of those Fifth Third Arena renovations forward, because up until UC actually, you know, announced the arena renovation, Mick himself was raising funds to just renovate the locker room. Like, that's all he, you know, I guess the locker room was so subpar, he basically had to go out and fundraise himself with a lot of support from the athletic department. Then, you know, Mike Bone comes in there and, you know, says, hey, we're just going to do the whole arena all at once, you know, including the locker rooms. But I have to think Mick kind of flirting with some programs will push that along.
Oh, yeah, in the UNLV case especially, like, it seems like that was the cause of a lot of, like, what UC did. At least if it wasn't the direct cause, it was, like, part of what happened with, like, him flirting so heavily with UNLV. It's like, that wasn't, like, a one-day thing. That was, like, he was there for, what, like, a few days. And then we learned, like, a lot about what UNLV was, like, offering him. Like, especially with, like Adidas. Like, UC's under Armour now, so it's different. Like, back when they were with Adidas, like, UNLV was, like, willing to, or Adidas was willing to help UNLV pay your salary. So, yeah, it seemed like he probably got a little bit of a boost from whoever sponsors him now and then.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So,
and he got like a new contract too after that, I'm pretty sure.
He did, yeah. And I'm sure a lot of those things were built into his contract. Like, I'm sure, you know, assistant salary pay, corporate jet, you know, those things that he's basically been asking for a decade now. So yeah, I don't think he leaves for UCLA. I do agree, like, on the surface, UCLA would be a better program, but you're right, like, the new coach coming in there has to have that guarantee from the athletic department that they're going to treat it like an elite level program, like everyone thinks it should be. So we'll see.
Okay, just hypothetically, like, would you be more worried if he was like a candidate at UCLA, or like, I don't know, like Kevin Keats goes to UCLA, and NC State comes open, and NC State comes after Mick Cronin? Which one would worry you more?
You said UCLA versus NC State?
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you're an NC State that has established programs, established history of supporting the basketball program. You're playing in the best conference in basketball, the best conference in college basketball. On the one other hand, you have a program that has recently had a lackluster support, but you've got the UCLA name to recruit to. I still say UCLA. Because I feel like if he turns around to UCLA and is able to pull in like 4 and 5 star recruits, you know, from all around the country, I mean, you're basically telling recruits in like Minnesota or like Virginia, hey, come play for me in LA, you know, and wear the UCLA brand on your chest. I still say that's a better job. What do you think?
Oh, I do too. I'm just interested to see what you would think if like an ACC team like made a run at him, since like you don't think he would go west.
Well, see, I think yeah, an ACC team for sure, but NC State's still fighting against Duke and North Carolina in their own state, and then they still have to deal with like the likes of Syracuse and Louisville, etc. Like, they're NC State's a good program, but they're still fighting just to even get to like fourth in the ACC. Where like UCLA, he can go to UCLA and win Pac-12 titles after Pac-12 titles. Like, who's going to challenge him out west? Maybe Arizona. Who knows what's going to happen with Sean Miller? I don't know.
I think that's one of the things. We can stop talking about UCLA after this. That makes that program really interesting right now. It's like the Pac-12 is really down right now. Like, Washington's like had a really solid season. Like, they're in the top 25. But they're the only ones. Like, Arizona State's like, all right. But Arizona's down, and who knows what's going to happen with Sean Miller. Like, you could step in there and just, like, it seems like just win big, like, almost right away and, like, be an instant contender. But speaking of going to the ACC, like, one of the biggest things coming around is the AAC media deal. And some of the things that...
Oh, segue!
Some of the things that might be going around with it. It seems like now that a grant of rights deal is, like, going to be no longer, like, a requirement. I don't know. It seems like some of the big schools definitely don't want to sign it, while some of the smaller schools definitely would. And... what are your thoughts on the AAC potential media deal and where that could all end up?
I am very excited that they're announcing it so early. As of now, it's basically an exclusive contract with ESPN for first tier rights until 2019-2020. But the Memphis president, who's been spearheading the negotiations, has basically said, yeah, we've got this. We got an extension signed, and we've got a new deal signed, and we're not waiting until 2019-2020, which that tells me a couple of things. One, they're going to re-up with ESPN, which makes total sense. I mean, ESPN lowballed them back when the conference was formed just because the AAC didn't have proven inventory. Like, no one knew back then that Central Florida was going to compete for Access Bowl bids year in and year out. No one no one really thought that this conference was going to have appealing basketball inventory. No one really thought that this conference was really, I mean, was really going to rise to the level that it is a Power Six program on both sides of both football and basketball. So they gave him a $2 million per school per year contract. But what that did for the conference was that it allowed them to be partnered with the biggest media entity in sports and build the brand that way. Like something, I think someone came out with an article, I think it was Sports Business Daily, saying that this past season, UCF has earned something like $230 million in potential media exposure as a result of the season that they put out there. And a lot of that is because they got games on ESPN with a lot of eyes on that program. And we've seen the numbers come out over and over and over again. AAC teams performing well on ESPN and CBS. So it sounds like this contract is going to be on ESPN with first-year rights. It sounds like it's going to be a bump. I think a lot of people are expecting somewhere in the $8 to $10 million range, which would by far put them ahead of everyone else in the G5. If they just get into eight figures, if they get up to like 12 or 13, which seems a little unrealistic, I'd be over the moon with that. But you're right. The biggest question there is the grant of rights. Do you think they've signed a grant of rights? And if they do, what do you think that the media deal will be? Because it'll probably be a little on the higher end if they do so.
From what it sounds like right now, I just like skimmed a column while you were talking. It sounds like it could be from 6 to 10 million a team, which, like, as you mentioned, a pretty significant boost. And, like, not having to sign a grant of rights is, like, pretty gigantic if you can avoid it. Just because, what, the Big 12 comes open in a couple of years. I think 2025 is the big year for that one. So if, like, you want to get out, which seems like a lot of the teams in the conference do, like, you can't really afford to be locked in despite how much more it would pay. But, like, for the bottom teams in the league, like your East Carolina's and like Tulane's and whoever else is like really struggling with revenue, like just like re-upping with ESPN, it's like a gigantic boost. And like keeping like your big games on TV and like staying like in the national spotlight is like really huge, because you're not going to end up with a deal like the Big East has, like, or like they're almost the only conference that can survive without ESPN. Because Fox shows their games all year long and like on actual Fox, which is a huge boost for them.
Yeah, and I'd be really curious what they do with those second and third tier rights, because they're probably going to mostly be on ESPN. But do they put, you know, instead of putting games on ESPN3 exclusively, do they put them on ESPN Plus and then force subscribers to kind of help supplement some of that contract? You know, $5 a month across tens of thousands of AAC fans, you know, can definitely help boost that up a little bit. Do they throw games over to like Facebook or YouTube or Amazon, you know, all of which are starving for content? Like, I feel like the first round of the media deal, Oresco basically was going for, let's build the brand, let's get eyes on this conference, no matter how much we would have to sacrifice financially. Now that they have data points to show that the inventory in this conference is valuable from like a watchability standpoint and households and looking at and getting viewers on these games, I wonder if he's going to sacrifice some of the accessibility to boost the revenues by throwing games over to like YouTube and Facebook and all that. That'd be what I'm curious to see.
I think you're more right with ESPN Plus, because it seems like with the other ESPN deals that have been signed, according to this article from the Connecticut paper, like the SEC and the ACC sold like their third tier rights to ESPN. Which is fine for them, because like their games are SEC network and the soon to be ACC network.
Like, yeah, both of which are partnered with ESPN to start. Go ahead.
And the Sun Belt is like the third one that sold their third tier rights to the ESPN, and like almost all of their stuff is on ESPN Plus. So you got to think, if the AAC like sold their like third tier rights to ESPN, like they would end up all on ESPN Plus. I can't imagine where it would be anything different. Which like would almost be like a, I think it would be a big blow for the league in a sense. Like ESPN Plus is like $5 a month, but going behind like a paywall, not having your games on TV freely anymore, like because they wouldn't be on CBS anymore. So like you'd have like a ton of games on just on the internet, which I think could be like if you're like UC or like Central Florida or South Florida or whoever else is good consistently like Memphis, you probably won't have to worry about it too much. But if like you're anybody at the bottom of the league, your games are never going to be on TV.
Yeah. Yeah, and the question there is, you know, if you're I don't personally have ESPN Plus. Scott, do you have ESPN Plus?
I don't have ESPN Plus either.
Well, the thing about like ESPN 3 is that it can be accessed everywhere. Like, you're right, putting it behind a paywall just creates another layer of I don't want to call it like discomfort, I guess, but like forcing someone to go through the extra effort of having to watch a game, right? If you're at like a bar or something like that trying to put on a game, and they might have ESPN 3 just because it's a part of their ESPN package, and they can hook the Roku up or the Fire Stick up, and they have ESPN 3, but because they also have cable and they're paying for ESPN, so they get all that other stuff free. With ESPN Plus, they're asking all of these people with TVs, whether it be a bar or a household, to pay that extra $5 and go through the extra effort of also finding that game, which I don't know how many people are going to be doing that. That being said, as long as you can get kind of your marquee games out there, like your Houston, your Cincinnati, your Central Florida's, your Memphis's, does it really matter if Tulsa and Tulane are buried on ESPN Plus? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, if you can get $10 million out of the deal per school per year, I mean, that's what, five times more than they're getting now? Maybe it's worth it.
Like, maybe it is worth it. But then, like, last night's game would have been on ESPN Plus. Like, the Central Florida game, I'm pretty sure that was on CBS, wasn't it? I don't remember.
Central Florida was ESPN 2, I think. Okay. Because it was a weeknight game, I think. But go ahead. Last night's game, though, was on CBS Sportsnet. Right.
And Houston, like, their game against East Carolina was actually on ESPN 3. So, like, kind of, like, disconcerting in that sense. But, like, I don't know. I just, like, wouldn't be, like, a huge fan of, like, ending up behind a paywall. Like, when you look at, like, the football schedule, like, they already play, like, quite a few games on ESPN 3. Then, like, all of those would be, you'd have to pay to watch, like, you see play whatever Division II school that they play.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those trade-offs, right? Because you're getting more money, which, you know, can go a long way. Like, for UC, you spend $10 million in the athletic department. You give the women's basketball coach a nice raise, which she deserves. You're able to put more money into the football and basketball program in terms of, like, you know, I don't know, giving Luke Fickell more money for his assistants, which he sorely needs. You know, putting more money into the recruiting program. You know, helping to identify players, getting more flying more players out for official visits, and getting them into camps, hosting more camps, that kind of stuff. At that same time, if you are a Cincinnati, I feel like you almost have to bet on yourself and say, hey, we are a program that is pulling in good TV numbers, football and basketball side. More than likely, most of our games will be on the ESPNs or the ESPN2s or the CBSs, if that's part of the deal still. If occasionally UC is playing like Tulane in basketball and they have to get thrown on ESPN Plus, so be it. At least your marquee games are still on those big time networks.
I think where it really affects is football, because last season, the quick math, they played five of their games on CBS or ESPN 3. Like, you'd be asking people to, like, invest in this and, like, ESPN Plus to, like, watch half your games. Which, I mean, like, could be nothing, could be something. Like, who really knows?
It's like, I mean, the question there is like, if, you know, you're giving up five games that have to go through a paywall, but you still get Central Florida on ESPN, you know, the flagship. I don't know, like, that's the trade-off you have to think about, right?
Yeah, like, 100%. And like you said, okay, I guess it doesn't really matter for the league, because, like, they get their money anyway. It just really boils down to, like, the fan experience. And if, like, our team, like, ends up on the short end of the stick, and, like, you can't just watch them play SMU, like, on TV. Like, you have to watch it off your computer. Like, which would really be, like, a detriment, like, if you watch games off, like, your DVR or something. You don't have that ability anymore.
I guess, like, it's... Like, if we're looking at it from a standpoint of Cincinnati, where the football and basketball program, year in and year out, should be fighting for conference titles. Like, they should be winning double-digit games, or right around double digits on the football side. They should be ranked on the basketball side. So, from a watchability standpoint, those should be bumped up near the top. As, like, how all the games are slotted is every week there's a call between the major networks and the conferences, and they say, hey, we have Cincinnati and Houston in football, two ranked teams. Who wants it? ESPN raises their hand and say, hey, we'll put that on our ESPN2. And they say, okay. Then there's, like, the games against, like, you know, SMU and Tulane, and they say, hey, okay, we have SMU and Tulane on Saturday. Who wants it? What time slot? ESPN says, no, we don't have enough inventory. You guys can have it, CBS Sportsnet. And they'll say, okay, we'll take it. See, if I'm like Cincinnati, I feel like if I'm, like, based on what I've built up from a watchability standpoint, I'm more likely to get my hand raised when ESPN says need inventory for Saturday for ESPN or ESPN2. If I'm like Tulane or Tulsa or SMU or whatever, like those lower tier teams, that's where I'd be really worried about being able to get my brand out there.
Yeah, like 100%. But at the same time, ESPN only has four channels. Like,
you're yeah, gonna be so I know. Like, yeah, yeah. I get that.
Like, so, like, that, and, like, it probably would mean more weird day TV, right? Where you're just getting your games on, like, Friday and, like, Thursday again, like, on a more consistent basis, just to try to be on TV all the time.
Yeah, how many games last year were on CBS Sportsnet? Football.
I think three.
Three. See, I didn't watch any of those games. I don't have CBS Sportsnet. The only way I could possibly get it is through like a pirated website. I did not watch those games at all. But, like, those games were what? Navy and what? SMU and
East Carolina,
like, games against really bad opponents. So, and you see won all those games, they won both all those games fairly comfortably. I guess SMU kind of came down to the, you know, the pick six, but they should have won that game pretty comfortably. I don't know. I'm sure if I'm missing anything, those games are putting on, if they're put on ESPN Plus. That's me personally, though. I can't speak for everybody.
Basketball-wise, it hasn't really mattered a ton. They've only had five basketball games this year, yes, CBS Plus. But then that you'd have to count the CBS game, too. And, like, those wouldn't be there anymore if you don't have your deal with CBS Plus, you wouldn't think.
Well, also, like, I mean, to your point, how many games were just on ESPN 3 or watch ESPN? Because those automatically get bumped over to ESPN Plus, probably.
Yeah, like, in football, it was two games, the Miami game and the Alabama A&M game. Like, for that non-conference slate in basketball, it seemed like it was like, half the games at the beginning of the early season.
Right.
So, like, that would just be something interesting to keep an eye on. Just, like, from our perspective, as people who watch the games, and not the people who get paid for the games.
Right. The thing is that if... So here's the thing. If they sacrificed putting games on CBS Sportsnet and moved, you know, like what you mentioned, three games on CBS Sportsnet in football over to ESPN Plus, off the top of my head, let's say they moved like six basketball games over to ESPN Plus from CBS Sportsnet. That's already an advantage for me because all I have to do is pay $5 a month to watch all of those games. Yeah, I would do that in a heartbeat because right now I have no ability to watch CBS Sportsnet. Zero. So that's a deal that works in my favor in that sense.
Yeah, that's one of the other advantages. Like when, like people who don't have cable, that's like an easy way to just catch some of these games without, like you said earlier, like shady websites and risking whatever happens to your computer or phone.
My work computer, I might add. So yeah, at the end of the day, it's a very complicated process. When it comes down to kind of like money, I'm hoping for eight figures. I'm expecting more around $8 million, you know. You mentioned the range is probably 6 to 10. I don't think 6 is on the table unless the team's not signing a grant of rights is a huge deal to ESPN. And that also indicates to me, like, if teams aren't signing grants of rights and ESPN says, okay, well, we can only offer you $6 million, then that almost indicates to me that come conference – realignment time, they think that like Central Florida, Houston, Cincinnati are sitting there waiting to get poached by the ACC or Big 12. Then if that's the case, then Cincinnati should be fine long term anyways, right?
You would hope so, at least.
Yeah, you would hope so, unless the Big 12 gets into a room and says, hey, we don't actually want to expand even though we're talking about expansion for 2 years. So, yeah.
Or, like, somehow you just get passed over for somebody else. The other worst-case scenario.
Yes, that's true. So, yeah, I mean, we should... It sounds like the Memphis president was saying we should hear something, either late this week or next week or something. I'm very excited to see all the details come out because, we talk about what this conference should be. They should be a power six in term on the football side. They should be a power seven on the basketball side. They've proven that out on the court and on the field. They just haven't been treated like that in terms of financial benefits. So, you know, hopefully we see that, and hopefully what comes along in the future is better bowl tie-ins, better non-conference. Non-conference games, and maybe they get a good tournament against the Big East. You know, maybe they get an ESPN sponsored tournament against the ACC. You never know.
Yeah, let's not go crazy on the bowl tie-ins just yet. Until they get like one bowl tie-in,
right? So yeah, I mean, like you get better bowl tie-ins on the football side than the basketball side. Maybe they get like an ESPN sponsor, you know, AAC Big East, you know, crossover. Or an AAC Big Ten crossover, something like that. You never know. You never getting aligned with ESPN, getting more money with ESPN. That should hopefully lead to better things down the road. You never know.
But and like the benefit to like all of your smaller sports, like baseball and whatever else they play, like women's basketball, like all that stuff has a home now, like on ESPN Plus. Like all the Sun Belt stuff is on ESPN Plus. Like all your smaller AAC stuff would hypothetically be on ESPN Plus if it gets that far and they sign like all their rights to ESPN instead of keeping their third tier rights for themselves.
But yeah, definitely.
We'll find that out pretty soon, I would imagine.
Yeah, it should be within the next week or so, hopefully. And you know, I will say I will be disappointed if it's under, you know, $8 million. If it's under $8 million and they signed a grant of rights. If they didn't sign a grant of rights and it's under $8 million, then like we talked about earlier, that almost indicates that the network believe the conferences are going to realign again, at which point Cincinnati should be in a good position to jump to a Power 5 conference. All speculation, that's of course, but you never know.
Yeah, which as we saw with conference realignment last time, you really never know. Do you have anything else before we wrap this one up, Chris?
No, I don't have anything else. UC plays Memphis on Sunday. I'm sorry. They don't play Memphis on Sunday. They play Memphis on Saturday night. Then we have UCF next Thursday night, and then they close out the season Houston at home on Sunday. Three really, really big games. I'm not sure when we're going to record again, Scott. Maybe next Friday following Central Florida, or maybe we'll do a midweek one. But we will be back soon.
One last thing. The Wednesday-Saturday, much better than Thursday-Sunday. I'm not a fan of the Thursday-Sunday.
No. No, I don't like that. Not from our schedule, especially. No, I totally agree.
Well, thanks for joining us. Hopefully we come back talking about big wins, and our fears earlier in this podcast will be put aside. Thanks for joining us, and as always, go Bearcats!